you're listening to Sarah Archer and episode 285 of the Speaking Club podcast. I want to open this show with a quote from the legendary Seth Godin, author and marketing strategist. You can raise the bar, or you can wait for others to raise it, but it's getting raised regardless. I started this podcast for two reasons. Because I want to help people recognize the power of stories and humor in speaking, and because I believe it's your message that counts, not the number of ums and ahs you use. There are some organizations that want to create robot speakers. They want you to sacrifice your personality in order to speak perfectly. But I want to let you know that you can be yourself and a sensational speaker. So, if you want to be a speaker that connects and engages authentically through stories, a speaker that gives value as well as a great performance, then welcome home. Hey, I hope you're well. Thanks so much for joining me here again on the Speaking Club. I'm sitting here slightly bruised and battered because I fell off the climbing wall at the weekend. I've got an ankle the size of Wilson from Castaway, a bruised elbow, the same one that the girl knelt on when I tried Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which I think I told you about before, and my ear is bent from my mum telling me I should act my age and take up lawn bowling. But apart from that, I'm fine and dandy. And as I said to my coaching clients this week, as long as the brain and the mouth works, it's all good. Anyway, let me crack on with the show. Because what I wanted to share with you this week was prompted by a talk planning call I had the other day with a potential client. And this is what he said to me. He said, "I just want to get consistent results. Sometimes I start my talk and I can feel the energy shift and I know I've engaged them. But other times I just can't get their attention. And I want to understand how to do this consistently every time I speak." Well, the truth is that grabbing your audience's attention in the right way, or hooking them in, as I call it, is one of the biggest stumbling blocks for a successful talk. And the first 180 seconds of your talk is perhaps the most crucial. And that's because in that 2 to 3 minutes, you are communicating a whole lot to your audience without even realizing it. The way that you walk out onto stage, what you wear, the way that you stand, what you do with your hands, what point you start to speak, what you say when you speak, and of course, how you say it. All of these things send signals to your audience about your message and about you as a speaker. It says whether you own the stage or you're afraid of it, whether your message is relevant to them or not. It says whether they're in safe hands and they can relax, or they're likely to spend the next 20 to 45 minutes feeling awkward, uncomfortable, or bored. And on receiving this information from you, both consciously and unconsciously, your audience will decide whether they should pay attention or switch off and carry on checking their emails. And you've probably experienced all of this yourself when you've been in the audience. Maybe you felt it as a speaker, if you've already started doing talks like the guy I was speaking to. Possibly you've got some bits right. Maybe you dressed to reflect your brand. You walked out onto the stage confidently, not cockily, and you stood in the center and looked at the audience. But perhaps then you started speaking and it went wrong. Chances are, if that happened, you made one of these mistakes, which I see speakers making regularly. Introducing themselves and sharing all their achievements. Doing something to grab attention that's got nothing to do with what they're speaking about. Asking inane questions with obvious answers. Making a bad joke. Telling an overused anecdote. Or failing to build rapport. And that's just a few of them. But why do people make these mistakes? Well, I think it's related to a board game that I really dislike. During lockdown, I became homeless and had to live with my in-laws for 8 months. This actually sounds a bit more dramatic than it was. Essentially, our house purchase fell through. I wasn't walking the streets with a little tin cup and my dog lying at my feet. Anyway, so we had to stay with our in-laws 24/7. Now, you might think this would have been tough. And it might well have been, but for the discovery of board games. The Jaws board game I bought on a whim before we moved in became the gateway drug for us all into a whole new world we hadn't known existed. Soon, we're building castles in Carcassonne, winning jewels in medieval Europe in Splendor, and more recently playing with woodland creatures in a game called Everdell. And I'm not ashamed to admit it, that I am now a board game nerd, as are my in-laws. And there's not many games I don't like, but there is one that's at the top of that very short no list. It's called Herd Mentality. Have you played it? Lots of people really like it. The concept is that you answer a question, and to win, you've got to come up with the same answer as everyone else playing. But the reason I dislike this game so much is because I think it encourages you to be mediocre, to play small, to conform. And in my humble opinion, there's already too much of that going on in life and business. I get it. Just like with other species, there is safety in numbers. If you don't stand out, you won't become prey. But equally, you won't innovate, inspire, or lead if you stay part of the pack. And that's why if you want to become a speaker, a thought leader, someone who influences audiences, and if you want your message heard, you cannot stay part of the herd. But even if we consciously want to step into the thought leadership space, sometimes our ego will be working in the background to keep us safe. And it's going to come up with obvious ideas for talk titles, opens and closes. And the thing is, right, it's not until you get past that ego that you're going to access the good stuff, what I call the audacious stuff. And there's a few ways that you can do that to get past that ego. First of all, you can go for quantity to find the quality. And I was talking about this concept with one of my coaches. Shout out to Ross O'Loughlin. He shared a story with me about the Thriller album. Apparently for this album, Quincy Jones and Michael Jackson made hundreds of songs, but only 9 made it. And those were the best of the bunch. But they only found those because they made all the others. And if you can avoid relying on ChatGPT to come up with the answers and push yourself past the obvious, you will start to tap into that audacious stuff. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying don't use ChatGPT to generate some additional ideas, but nothing that it comes up with will be what you and your subconscious will throw up if you dig deeper. When you push for quantity, you'll find the ideas that are bold and different. Not just so that you stand out, but also in service to the message and to better resonate with your audience. Now, another way that you can get the good stuff is to have someone push you, to challenge you, to help you see things from another perspective and steer clear of that dreaded herd mentality. Here's a few questions I ask when I work with clients on talk titles, opens and closes of their talks and so on. And I'd like you to have a think about these questions in relation to your next talk. So first of all, can you make it cheekier? Can you be more provocative? Can you invoke more curiosity? Can you be more shocking? And I wanted to give you an example of how considering these things can make a difference through the story of my client, Joe. Joe is a senior lecturer in fashion and textiles, and she's was pitching to get funding for a new venture to help UK textile companies take advantage of the drive for more sustainability in the fashion industry. And she said, "Sarah, can you help me make this pitch more compelling and engaging?" So she sent me the brief and the first draft she'd put together. And what struck me right away was that the start of her pitch was nice. It was all about how the textile industry had built the city where she was going to be doing the pitch and the heritage it had and that sort of stuff. But what it didn't really do was speak to the problem she saw or the opportunity that was on offer in an attention-grabbing way. So we had a chat about it, and we found a recent newspaper article which Joe actually already knew about. And this newspaper article was talking about the environmental and human rights issues that were associated with the fast fashion industry. And when I had a look at that article, two things jumped out to me. First of all, an artist had created a figure out of used clothing, and he called it White Man, a textile zombie. And this picture was quite in your face. It was a visual representation of one of the big problems in that industry, which is waste. Apparently, every year, the fashion industry creates enough garments to clothe everyone in the world 6 times over, which is shocking. And then another thing that jumped out in that article was the story of a woman in the UK who'd found a Chinese prisoner ID sewn into the sleeve lining of her regatta jacket. And regatta's a brand if it's not where you are. And both of these anecdotes, for me, quickly and provocatively summed up the issues that are driving the public to want more sustainable humanitarian alternatives to fast fashion. And it also highlighted the opportunity that this presents to smaller textile companies in the UK and around the world, because, you know, they'll want to bring things back on shore if they are in position operationally to take advantage. And these examples were really provocative and visceral. And visceral is a word I often use around grabbing the attention of your audience. You've probably heard me say it on here before. We want your audience to have a reaction, especially to the opening of your talk. And particularly when we're trying to connect with them, we want to try and get them to feel something. And part of getting that reaction is spending time understanding them, their thoughts, their feelings, their behaviours, what they desire, what they fear. And I've talked about this before. And the other part is being prepared to go beyond nice. And yes, of course, we want to build rapport, but we can do that after we have their attention. And again, you've probably heard me talk about this before. I call this the push and the pull. And if you want to find out more about how to do that, then you can have a listen to episode 268 of the podcast, where I talk all about this. And I've put the link in the show notes for you. And as I mentioned before, we want to be audacious with our content and our delivery so that we get the audience leaning in. So after our session, Jo went away, rejigged the start of her pitch, and reshaped some of the other bits that we discussed. And I caught up with her after she'd done the pitch to find out how she got on. And she was chuffed to bits because she smashed it and she got the funding she wanted. How you start your talk is a big focus for a workshop I do called Hookology, which I ran this week. And in that workshop, we work on the talk title, the opening and the close. And I still run this from time to time. And if you would like to get on the waiting list for the next one, you can do that over at saraharcher.co.uk/hookology. Again, there'll be a link in the show notes if that's of interest to you. But anyway, at the end of the session that I ran this week, I asked people for their biggest takeaways. And the one that I was most chuffed to hear was this one. I see now that I can be me when I speak. I can be provocative and funny, and I don't have to suppress that part of me. And that, for me, is one of the fundamental aspects of what I teach and what I believe. People often come to me with an idea of what a professional speaker is supposed to be like, what they're supposed to say, how they should say it, and then they try and become that. And they lose the one thing that will make their talk unique and authentic, their self. And yes, I give people a structure for their talk, but it's in service to unlocking their personality, their unique energy signature, so that they can deliver the message in the most powerful way for them and for their audience. And you likely started on the journey that you're on because you've got a message that you feel compelled to share, that you're passionate about. And how empty and disconnected will your talk be if you don't fully express your personality, your passion, and your purpose? And that's also the beauty of being you on stage. You can't be copied. People might try and emulate you, especially when you put your head above the parapet and start talking about something new, when you become a thought leader. I mean, we've only got to look at the number of people that jump onto the latest bandwagon, whether that's AI or Bitcoin or neurodiversity, because they feel like it's hot at the moment. But if they will never be like you, because they won't have had your lived experience, your personality, your opinion, or your insight. Now, you might be thinking, but I'm not one of those showy extroverts, Sarah. In day-to-day life, I'm quieter. I'm not sure if I can do provocative and funny. And first of all, I'm not saying you've got to be loud and showy. I'm saying you've got to be you. And there are ways to grab the attention of your audience that are not loud and showy, that will be true to your style. And I've talked about this specific issue and other things relating to this topic previously in episode 103 of The Speaking Club. And that's about getting your public speaking persona right. And you can listen to that. I'll put the link for the show notes for that for you if you haven't heard that before. But this, I think, is the most important thing, because as you've likely seen yourself when you've been in the audience, it's obvious when people aren't being themselves, when they're copying, when they're jumping on a bandwagon or becoming the, you know, being the presenter they think they ought to be rather than being themselves. So if there's one thing I want you to remember from this podcast, I want it to be this: never suppress your personality. It's your gift. All you need to do is discover how to harness it and leverage it in service of your message and your audience. And if you want some help with that, well, you know where I am. Okay, so what are the takeaways for you? The most precious real estate of your talk is the opening, and it's worth investing time, thought, and energy to get this popping. Remember, you're communicating a lot in the first 3 minutes of your talk, even before you start to speak. Go for quantity over quality for generating ideas. The best stuff comes when you've exhausted the obvious. And when you've got some good ideas, ask yourself, can I push this further to be cheekier, more provocative, more attention grabbing? And just a caveat on that, it can be all those things as long as it's still relevant for your talk and your audience. What we don't want to do is be like those clickbaity headlines where you click through and it's nothing to do with what you clicked on. If you push, make sure you pull them back. And as I said, you can listen to episode 268 to find out more about how to do this. Never suppress your personality or your passion because you feel you ought to be a certain way. The best way to become a great speaker is to harness your unique gifts. And if you want to find out more about discovering your speaking persona, then have a listen to episode 103, as I said. There you go. I hope you found this episode useful. And if you did, let me know and do tell others about the show. And if you are a regular listener, or indeed if you listen to this one, it's the first one, but you liked it, then I'd be absolutely thrilled if you could leave a rating or review. Just take a couple of minutes over at ratethispodcast.com/TSC, or you can do that also wherever you're listening to this. Well, all the podcast apps have opportunities to rate the show as well. Well, that is it from me. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to check out the resources we have for free at saraharcher.co.uk. And you'll also find a link if you want to book your own talk planning session with me. You can do that at saraharcher.co.uk to help you move forward on your speaking journey. Until next time, you know what you've got to do? You've got to go out, grab your life by the nuts, be yourself, and get cracking. Bye-bye. It's a nightmare. You're an expert with so much to say, but now that you've been booked to speak, you're struggling to know exactly what to talk about. You want a talk that engages the audience and wins you new clients without you losing your personality or anyone feeling pitched to. But what happens when you sit down to create that talk is that you end up staring at a blank page for ages, or worse, surrounded by hundreds of sticky notes with content that you could include. With so much material, you just don't know where to start or finish. Don't worry, because many experts like you face exactly the same challenge. And that's why I created the Blank Page to Stage Guide. In just 50 minutes, this breakthrough resource is going to help you identify the big idea of your message, make it relatable for the audience that you're speaking to, and convey it all in a way that gets the audience inspired and on board with your idea. And it works even if you have tons of material or your subject feels less than exciting. If you want to cut through swathes of content and get a talk that you're excited to share, your audience loves, and wins you new clients, then grab your Blank Page to Stage Guide from saraharcher.co.uk/newguide-tsc. Oh, I forgot to say, it's completely free. Enjoy!